Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. Freedom of the press is rising steadily in Kenya. The Constitution now specifically prohibits the state from interfering with the editorial independence of journalists and their media outlets, both state-owned and private. Overall, newspaper circulation in Africa went up 30% in 2011. That's according to the African Center for Media Excellence. Nation Media Group has flourished in this unfettered environment. It's the largest independent media house in East and Central Africa, with operations in print, broadcast, and digital media. There are now outlets in neighboring countries Uganda, Tanzania, and Rwanda. To better understand Kenya's media landscape, I spoke to Business News reporter Mugambi Mutegi. Mugambi, who joined us earlier this month, is a visiting fellow from the Alfred Friendly Press Partners. The Friendly Foundation's program places international journalists in U.S. newsrooms and brings them to our journalism school for training. The goal is to both impart American journalistic traditions and respond to worldwide interest in the dissemination of fair and accurate news. Mugambi worked this spring and summer at the Chicago Tribune. In Nairobi, he's been working at the Business Daily, which is part of Nation Media.
Mugambi, tell us a bit about the development of Nation Media Group, how it started and how big it is now.
Well, Nation Media Group is said to be the biggest privately owned newspaper in East and Sub-Saharan Africa. I think it is, and it's owned by the Aga Khan. He resides in France. That's where, in Paris, France. He has several charitable organizations, and he opens businesses so that he can be good to humanity, like assist humanity. And through newspapers, the Aga Khan thought that he can uplift people in Africa through getting the right information factually. That's why he decided to get into the newspaper business, and that's what he runs right now. Nation Media Group is in Uganda, Tanzania, Kenya, and Rwanda. There are plans to go to other countries in future, and in all these countries, the main base is Nairobi, Kenya, where I work. It's a big building called the Nation Center. It houses several newspapers. As I'm telling you, it's the biggest newspaper group. So we have print in each country. In Kenya, there are business papers. There's a Swahili newspaper. There's a Swahili radio station. And you'll find this replicated in all the countries that they're in. Slowly, they'll have the main television station in Kenya, take it to Uganda under NTV Uganda, and then have a Swahili or a local language station under the same. Daily Monitor is a main paper there compared to Daily Nation in Kenya. Business Daily is a business paper there in Kenya. Maybe in future, the Nation Media Group branch of Uganda will prosper too, to get a business paper. So it's just a growing group. And you can work anywhere. I can write for Uganda. I can write for Tanzania. I work for the media group. I can be called for an interview in Uganda. Yeah, it's a big family of journalists in the East, in East Africa especially. Yeah.
Is there a language barrier as far as being able to speak? Is there a more common language that is spoken?
English. English is a majority of the newspapers and radio stations are in English. But Swahili is a language spoken in Tanzania a lot. Like they speak the fluent Swahili. Kenyans also speak Swahili. Part of Ugandans speak Swahili. Maybe the language barrier may not be really there.
What about the freedom to for you to write what you want to write and what your colleagues at the Tribune, the freedom to write what they want to write, compared with the press freedoms in Kenya?
Well, I'll not speak in terms of a history of press freedom. I've followed politics and the press. I've been an avid reader of the newspapers mm-hmm. growing up. I've only been there at Business Daily for 3 years, mm-hmm. but I still have compared with what I read and what I've experienced so far, I think Kenyans are way ahead in terms of press freedom. Well, I came to the States, and maybe you guys are more mature than mm-hmm. us, but the explanation I give is like you started the press business quite a while back, and it's just like growing up. You can't expect a 40-year-old to be less mature than a 20-year-old. So since Africans and Kenyans, for that matter, started the print and newspaper business much later than you guys, mm-hmm. that independence came much later,
right.
It only goes, it goes without saying that we'll have to be like a bit, not backward, but a step, a rung lower than mm-hmm. the Americans. As you progress, you're also progressing, but Americans were where we were a right. couple of years ago. Right. But when you fly here, you fly into the future, and you mm-hmm. meet this higher level of maturity in the newsroom also.
What are some of the lessons and practices that you've learned at the Tribune that you'll be able to take back and apply at the Business Daily in Kenya?
Well, the biggest lesson I've had here is that getting your facts right mm-hmm. is the biggest. Like my editors take fact checking so seriously.
The editors at the Tribune.
At the yeah. Tribune, they also do it back at home, but here we even have a software, the Tribune, that you check. You've called this person, check whether they're 36 years old or 37, whether you calculated, you put the right date, mm-hmm. every single, as long as in a sentence there's a figure or a fact which can be contested, you have to go back and call them. But back at home, which maybe is a weakness, mm-hmm. they'll tell me, Mugambi, so you checked your facts, counter-check your facts, I'll go through it. Maybe I'm feeling tired and I won't check whether you're 36 or 37, but I think since I've gone through it, when I go home, I'll make sure it's a practice I do, whether or not the fact where I can tick it off on a software is included, mm-hmm. I'll take the practice back home.
Okay.
Yeah.
But overall, you feel that when you are in Kenya that you are free to report business stories that you think should be reported on?
Yeah, in my 3 years of practice, I've collided with the high and mighty mm-hmm. multi-billionaires that I've written stories about, a real estate magnate who got into some mm-hmm. tiff with his ex-wife. He tried to pay me off, like he calls me and you know these things, and I know this guy he knows so many big people, but you still go ahead and publish his story. We can go after mm-hmm. anyone as long as what you're saying is true.
Okay.
And no one will like attack us or mm-hmm. threaten us. Yeah.
Now the coverage of your new president Uhuru Kenyatta, he's been in office almost 100 days.
Yeah, I think in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I understand that there have been some stories that have been not very flattering, some critical stories about him, and there have been no repercussions. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, as of any president, a president will come in with a set of promises mm-hmm. and pledges to commit that he'll do. So I think one of the pledges he had done was he'll give all Standard 1 kids, I think that's the first level of grade school, that they'll all get free laptops. Mm-hmm. And every other single day, that promise is morphing. Today, I think the latest I read today was that now we won't have laptops. They'll be given tablets. So mm-hmm. there's a whole debate around that, and we give the coverage. We give the coverage that he promised this. Mm-hmm. He's not doing this. And that goes for the president himself and for top officials right. in his government.
Yeah. Tell us the story about the vice president and his the stories that the media wrote about the chartered plane that the vice president paid for.
Well, our vice president is called William Samoei Ruto. Mm-hmm. He's also indicted at the ICC with the president himself.
Right, for the war crimes.
Yeah, war crimes that happened court. In 2008, right. 2007 election, 2008. Mm-hmm. Well, so they're in power right now. The majority of the Kenyans, mm-hmm. if we believe what the election results said, who won, they are rightfully elected. Mm-hmm. So William decided to charter a plane for 100 million Kenyan shillings, which is around 1.2 or so million dollars. Mm-hmm. And he was supposed to use this for his own private business outside the country. And Nation Media Group, my company, the main newspaper called Daily Nation, got a copy of these agreements that are going on between the vice president and the vice president's office. And I can't remember the name of the supplier of this jet. And mm-hmm. front page, William Ruto's 100 million Kenya shillings jet, it was a talk of the town for, quite a bit. Yeah, because people are angry about it. Why can't mm-hmm. he just get a normal
right.
Kenyan plane? Yeah, and we wrote about it. He tried to put a PR spin to it. Nation went ahead and splashed the actual agreements on the front page again just to shut him down.
Right.
Yeah. And then I think right now the debate is done, but it just showed that Nation is not taking sides with whoever it is, whether you own, whether in mm-hmm. government or not, you'll still get the same level of treatment as anyone else.
And how does Kenya's press compare with some of the neighboring countries, Uganda, for example?
Well, I think other than just being maybe the journalists want the same thing, but we all live in different environments. Mm-hmm. And I have journalist friends in Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda, maybe just one, mm-hmm. but they all want the same thing, but their presidencies, their realities are different. In Uganda, our president and mm-hmm. Museveni are not cut from the same cloth.
Right.
They are two different kinds of
Museveni people. Is the president.
Museveni is the president. Yoweri Museveni yes. is the president of Uganda. People call him a dictator. I don't know whether that's the right term to use. He'll be compared in the same breath with Mugabe. There's a issue about a letter being written about him wanting to leave mm-hmm. the power to his son. And he went and clamped down newspapers.
There were newspapers that reported this.
Which was the Daily Monitor, mm-hmm. The Red Pepper, which is a tabloid, mm-hmm. Radio stations KFM, which is a Nation Media Group radio station, was also closed down, and I think another station, all in a court order in looking for that said letter. It's just a letter, mm-hmm. nothing else. That Daily Monitor, maybe is other. Anti-government, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. press are targeted by the police and all these things. You don't find that in Kenya.
Yes.
It was there. There are those people who might want to perpetuate it, but they don't have... It's that time of... That era in Kenya is done.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long has it been, roughly, that you've been able to report freely in Kenya?
Well, I think... we've had, this is our fourth president.
Right.
Under our first president, Jomo Kenyatta, it was a big dictatorial.
He's the father of the
current
president.
Yeah. The second president was Daniel Arap Moi. He's still alive in a retirement home. He was also not very friendly with the press. Then came Mwai Kibaki, who retired prior to now. He mm-hmm. went for 2 terms, 10 years. He retired this year. So the period when, I think for me, press freedom matured was 2002 when Mwai Kibaki came into power. Mm-hmm. And he let us speak as we wanted. And you could see, because if you were alive then, you could see the difference between how the media is being let to go, to get off with things they were saying against the former president, and compare with this. For one, one example is that at, for Moi, every 7 o'clock news, 1 o'clock news, and 9 o'clock news, any story that had to that preceded him, you had to have a portrait of Moi there, plastered on the TV screens, the national anthem is sung, and then now you can now say where the president was on that day. If you have to like start the broadcast with a sort of a pledge of allegiance to him, I don't think that story which is going to follow will be negative.
Yeah, because it's the self-censorship will take place.
So when after he got out, you could say anything about, practically anything about Mwai Kibaki, and people are like writing articles about him that he has a hands-off kind of leadership, but that's just how he was. And that's when the press were allowed to say something bad about corruption in Mwai Kibaki's era. They could highlight incidences of free primary education funds being eaten up or somewhere, such things. That's 2002, 2012, and we can see the same thing happening with Uhuru Kenyatta. Okay. I don't think we'll go back to where we were with Moi. It's only going ahead, yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk a bit about business reporting and transparency. How is it? Is it easier to report on companies in the United States and particularly public companies and compared with how you can report on companies in Kenya?
Well, yeah, I think yep. I don't know. I listen in. I can't come in and be thrown to the deep end at the business desk at the Tribune, because there are things which I'm not familiar with.
Right. The inner workings of particular businesses.
Yeah, I can't come and start writing about Boeing, like the nitty gritties of Boeing. Right. I might not know historical. Yeah, but I listen in because the journalists speak loudly. I listen into the conversation and how they get their material. I think there are many more avenues here. It's maybe a bit easier for them to get information that might not be. I think there's a law that you can request to have like minutes.
Freedom of information laws
that you can request to have minutes of meetings.
Yes.
You can also. I forget the term. If you can tell the government to furnish you with certain documents within a certain number of days.
Right, sunshine laws.
Those laws are not. What happens in a meeting, even though it's publicly traded, There's no law that I can use to like tell these guys, I need these meetings of Friday's meeting.
You need the minutes of the meetings.
Yes. The minutes of the meeting within a week. We don't have such kind of laws, which they have it easier here, in terms of that. But now it makes me back at home in Kenya that I need to get friendly with people in such companies. So maybe I have an insider who can give me information that, by the way, this guy was kicked out last week, because you won't know if you just sit back. You know that something big happened, unless it finally comes out in the limelight, maybe a month later. You cannot say that I think something happened. I want the minutes. You don't have it back at home.
And are there any records in Kenya about what companies give to politicians?
No, that's something else I found. I think that's one of the stories I read here, and I was really impressed about. I think Boeing was there. The Tribune did, I think, a front page story about the top companies that gave Barack Obama some funds for the election. In Kenya, no one knows. Such things will never see the light of day. You find someone as a bank, that's it. It's a done deal. You settle those agreements in a golf course, and that's it. No one will ever know that you gave this. I can give you an instance.
Okay.
Royal Media Group is a competitor to Nation Media Group. It has a couple of newspapers, and the owner of that media house gave supported Raila Odinga in the previous election.
He's the person who ran against Kenyatta and almost won.
Won. As I said earlier, whoever you choose to believe who won, no one knows, apparently. Counterclaims here and there. But he supported he supported Raila Odinga. And it was the first time that someone private who has enterprises and who has interest in the country like came out and said, I support this guy. And that was, it was such a debate whether, you know, whether the Royal Media Group now is going to be impartial in covering Uhuru Kenyatta. Right. And what role do private businessmen or women have in supporting a candidate? This guy, he runs his own business, so he can do whatever he wants.
Right. So, but there was a pretty big change between how the media covered the 2009 elections and the violence that happened after the elections compared with the elections this time, even though there was a lot of people who thought that Kenyatta didn't really win. You didn't have the protests and the fighting and killing that you had in the previous elections. And part of that has been attributed to a more responsible coverage by the media in Kenya of this past election. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, the media, the church were faulted heavily for the when we fought. Apparently, even one radio broadcaster is still charged. He's called William Sang, Arab Sang. He's also charged at the ICC for apparently, allegedly airing, giving inflammatory statements during the lead-up to the election.
The 2009
election.
2007 election.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's accused also with the president, the vice president, and all. He's there. And, well, it was true, I think, because you could tell maybe the other media houses which had picked sides, some of them were writing inflammatory kind of headlines and all these things. It is true. Right. But I can speak for Nation Media Group because I was there and our editorial directors sat down and like proactively would sit us down, give us guidelines. We had an election guideline about how to cover elections. And we all set rules, told advertising, gave rules on advertising during the electioneering period to potential clients that during all this time, you know, you're only going to be taking adverts which look like this, which look like this. And also the reporters were told, write, you know, factual stuff.
Right. Don't take sides.
Don't take sides. If you take sides, it's okay. Everyone has a vote, but don't cause divisions in the newsroom because you are pro Raila or pro Uhuru. Just be mature with your democracy path. Yeah. So it was calmed down right now. The opposite now happened with the CNNs and all these guys. So they came there and everyone was like, tension is high.
Yes, it's trying to stir up trouble.
Stir up trouble. Tensions are high. Were the common phrase. The battle lines have been drawn. Wondering where have they been drawn, and we didn't fight. Yeah, there were several cases. A CNN lady who went to the forest and had these goons, like they plastered chalk on their faces, saying that we're preparing guerrillas,
preparing for violence.
Yeah. And you could almost see that these guys were acting it out for her. She was called by the police. I forget her name, but she was called by the police. The government asked her, you know, this is highly sensitive matter. Just kindly tell us who these people are and where you found them so that you can stop them or bring them to book. She what is it called? It's called protecting your source.
Yes.
She protected her sources, and that was it.
And it turned out that it was
false. I don't think that... It was just a comedy of sorts that these guys, hopefully they never got money out of her.
So the national media, or international media that came and reported on the elections in Kenya, were playing on stereotypes.
Yeah. Well, that's bad news sells. So I think they were flown all the way there. I don't know, in anticipation of a repeat of 2007. But I think the country had decided that people are really, pro-Raila people were really inflamed or charged up, but not to the extent of fighting. That's the difference. But this time, I think people had decided any election, there has to be a winner, there has to be a loser. Even when their side lost, they condoned the wild celebrations, but people didn't fight. Yeah. So the international media just left disappointed.
So finally, let us know what your feelings are about. Are you optimistic that this trend will continue, that the media will continue to be free, you'll be able to freely report on politics and business? What are your predictions for the future?
I'll be selfish since I've only been there 3 years. I hope from a career point of view that I'll be allowed to write freely and report and educate the citizens. From a national perspective, I think, having a free press is the best way to go. So it's my hope and prayer that we go on the same path we are on right now, and I believe we will. I don't see us going back from here.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, and thank you for your insights on what's happening in Kenya.
Okay. Thank you very much.
That was my interview with Mugambi Mutegi, recorded earlier this month. He is a Kenyan reporter and a visiting Friendly Foundation fellow. And that brings us to the end of this week's Global Journalist. This show is produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Global Journalist is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungagar is our executive producer. Free Press Watch is up next. And please join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.
And now, Free Press Watch, a weekly segment on Global Journalist, where we bring you a rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world. I'm Elisa Lopez. Today's news comes from the Committee to Protect Journalists, All Africa, Reuters, and the New York Times. Dutch journalist Judith Spiegel and her husband have spoken on a YouTube video released Monday after being kidnapped for a month, and an identified armed group abducted them in Yemen the second week of June. They say that if their government does not act, they could be executed. Russian newspaper editor and website contributor Akhmedavi Akhmedaviyev was shot to death in his car the morning of July 9 in the Republic of Dagestan. The assailants remain unidentified. Police and fellow journalists suspect the murder was linked to the journalists' investigations of political corruption and violent crime in the region. This isn't the first time the journalist was attacked. He survived a murder attempt earlier this year and received several death threats over the past years. In Gambia, recent amendments to the Information and Communication Act will severely restrict press freedom, according to Free Press advocates. The law was amended in the beginning of July. It will criminalize those who incite dissatisfaction against the government, spread false news about the government, or make derogatory statements against public officials on the internet. Those found guilty of these crimes could face a maximum fine up to $83,000 and/or a jail term of up to 15 years. For more information on these and other events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week on Global Journalist. I'm Elisa Lopez.